Welcome, sports fans, to the hottest sports podcast in the game, JT and the Don, with your hosts, Jimmy Thompson and Donato Bucci. They're covering the most current issues in sports from the 305 to the 412 and all the way to the West Coast. You can follow them on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at JT and the Don, or email them at jtandthedon@gmail.com. Now take it away, guys.
This is JT and the Don podcast. I'm the Don, Donato Bucci. We have an all football show for you today, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the show because we have a special guest with us today. But first, let me bring in everyone's favorite, JT, Jimmy Thompson. How you feeling?
I actually feel okay, not that bad. I'd rather be in Mexico right now, but I'm stuck here arguing with you about things that I feel like you have no idea about what's going on. But no, it's fun to be here, man. We're talking about football. It should be fun.
For the listeners out there, if you didn't know, JT finally went on his honeymoon.
You acting and, like I had a choice. Like I just finally decided to go.
Well, it's great to have you back. For the listeners, thank you for your patience, and we're ready to roll. So, JT, you want to welcome in our special guest who's been patiently waiting?
I actually really don't want to welcome him in because that's technically not my job. But, no, we got our in-house resident NFL expert. He also is a rocket scientist. His name is Chad Fox. Chad, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Pleasure to be here. First and foremost, I also want to welcome you back, JT, from your honeymoon, man. I heard it was beautiful out there. I saw all the pics on social media. I just have to say, man, just want to be like you one day when I grow up.
Man, no, please.
But I just also want to say, man, a longtime listener, the podcast, have a lot of respect for what you guys are doing, and it's definitely a treat to be here, and I'm honored to be part of the show.
Wow. We're delighted to have you, and thanks for the nice words. And
I mostly meant you, Donato, not as much JT, but he for those who know me that are listeners also know that.
Well, thank you. Well, I'll take that personally then. Thank you. Thank you. Sorry, JT. Well, let's get into it. Our first topic is going to deal with some NFL injuries. Drew Brees with his thumb, Ben Roethlisberger with his elbow. Drew Brees out approximately 6 weeks after thumb surgery, and Big Ben out for the season for the Steelers with the elbow injury. Two-part question here. Which injury has the bigger impact, and then what is your predicted fallout for each team based on these injuries?
No, I think obviously both of those injuries are pretty severe. I mean, you're losing all-time great franchise quarterbacks, one for the season in Big Ben, and then Brees is out for, they say, 6 weeks, but I think it could be longer. At first glance, I would just say that the Ben injury is worse just because it's a season ender. They were already struggling before he got injured, and now, I mean, I can't imagine. Even though he's your Hall of Fame pick, Mason Rudolph steps in. I don't think he's going to be Tom Brady right off the bat. But the more that I thought it was Ben, I don't know why I did this, but I went and looked at your schedule, and I realized you guys don't play a road game from week 4 until week 11. You guys got one road game against the Chargers, which is basically a road game for them too, but I think it's manageable, but I just think that Ben's is the bigger impact just because, like I said, he was already on a decline, and it was a non-contact injury, so this just seems like he's getting hurt because he's an old-ass dude. And I don't think it's going to happen, but this could be realistically the last time we see him in a Steelers uniform or on the football field, period. But I think that it's going to tank the season. I can see you guys definitely missing the playoffs. I already had you guys missing the playoffs with him. I think you guys are a lottery pick team now. And I hope this doesn't happen, but I can see this getting Tomlin fired. But for the Saints, I think that they can survive with Bridgewater until Brees returns. I think Sean Payton can get it done. And I think if he comes back and they win 3 games while he's out, I think they can still make the playoffs.
So, Chad, let me throw it over to you. Get your first opinion, being on JT and the Don, and answering those two questions. Which injury do you think has the biggest impact on those teams? And then what's your predicted fallout for the teams the rest of the year?
So as much as it pains me to agree with JT on this, I think we have a lot of the same sentiments. For those who don't know me, I'm originally from, you know, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So this topic is a little more near and dear to my heart than maybe.
The 412.
The 412 crew all day, man. You know,
I didn't want to say anything, but
JT.
I didn't want to say anything, but there's two of you guys on this damn show now.
JT knows nothing about that. JT knows nothing about that.
Yeah, he does.
And let's keep it that way.
And unfortunately, I got a bad introduction, so nobody would have known that until I spoke up, but... You know what? It's all good, man.
They can smell the terrible towel like through the airways. Everybody can tell you're
listen,
from Pittsburgh.
I think from now on, I got to intro all the guests because that was really poor. Like, you're supposed to hype up the guest, get the listeners excited about the guest, and you're just like, oh, blah, blah, blah. All right. And then that was it, JT. We got to work on that.
Yeah, I do kind of feel like chopped liver, but it's all good.
I called him a rocket scientist. What more do you want?
Yeah, but so basically, man. So basically, I feel like it's definitely going to affect the Steelers more. The Steelers missed the playoffs last year. As most sports fans know, they're still trying to find their identity. You know, from the past two off seasons, losing both Le'Veon Bell in 2018, and then this season. 2019, obviously Antonio Brown was traded in the offseason. So even with Ben there, they're still trying to find that chemistry on offense. I think last year Ben kind of shouldered a lot of the burden by missing Bell. And obviously this year, a lot of it was going to be up to him. You know, now that the three killer bees are basically that whole trio is basically broken up. Ben was going to be the glue that kind of held the whole offense together. Now that he's gone, I just don't see how they can keep up the production that he's given to the franchise for the last 15 years, especially bringing in essentially even though it's his second year, a rookie guy in Mason Rudolph, who I actually have a lot of faith in because he's proven to be, pretty competent. He's proven that he doesn't feel the stress or the pressure. He did a lot of good things in college and even performed really well in the preseason. So have a lot of faith in him, but it's almost impossible to match the production of a Hall of Famer in Big Ben. The Saints, on the other hand, Drew Brees, obviously a first ballot Hall of Famer as well. That's a tough loss for them, but I don't think it's as bad just for the fact that they have so many weapons on offense. And also obviously because Brees is projected to return later this year. So if they can hold up, maybe go 500 while he's out, I still see them, with the weak NFC South, either, still winning their division or sneaking in the wild card. They just have a lot of weapons. And I think Brees, when he comes back, he'll be firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, that was a great analysis there. Much better than JT has ever given in our 20 episode history of JT
and
the Dawn.
You see, this is why nobody likes you. This is why nobody takes it easy on you. See, you give you an inch, take the whole damn zip code. That's your problem.
Listen, that sounds more like a JT problem than any other problem. But I mean, I basically agree with you guys on all those all the points that you made. Ben being out for the season compared to 6 weeks, that's a huge difference. And then, Chad, you kind of hit the nail on the head right there with the Saints just having more offensive weapons. Michael Thomas, Kamara, Bridgewater probably can get by with those guys more than what Mason Rudolph's working with right now. Even though
Bridgewater didn't look that good against the Rams when he came in. So if he's going to play like that, I'm worried about them.
Yeah, but it was on the road. You got to remember, he's still coming off a bad injury, still very rusty.
He hasn't started in like 40 months. I get that.
Right, and I think he's going to be more prepared. Rams defense is good, especially with their pass rush. So it was tough. They're on the road. That's tough to judge, even though Mason Rudolph, prior to us going on the air with our podcast earlier this year in 2019, when our podcast started, I did tell JT back in 2018 before the draft that Mason Rudolph was one of my Hall of Fame guys from the 2018 draft class. So that's still a possibility, and now his time is here to show that I'm correct.
Well, we're going to find out if he's the next Mahomes real quick.
Yes, we are. The Saints defense right now is a little bit better than the Steelers. And Chad, you said it again. The NFC's not as good as I thought it would. The NFC South's not as good as I thought it would be. Carolina's struggling. Atlanta, you know, has had a rough week one, barely got by the Eagles at home in week two. So what I think it comes down to as far as the predictions here is the Steelers are going to go 8-8, not make the playoffs, because that's what they do under Tomlin in times of adversity. They go 500. So they're going to end up starting 0-2. They're going to end up 8-8, but miss the playoffs. I think the Saints, I looked at their schedule. I think they go 3-3 if it's only six games. I think they go 3-3 without Drew Brees. They'll make the playoffs because then he'll salvage the season at the end, but they won't have home field. So it won't matter for the Saints then because they won't get to the Super Bowl without home field.
Brees so is terrible away from New Orleans.
Right, and then especially in the playoffs. So – that's my prediction on that.
Quick question JT. To both of you guys. Do you think this is the last time we see Ben in a Steelers uniform?
Chad, I'll let you go first, Chad, as our guest.
You know what? That's a good question because, you know, he's getting older. He's 37 going into this season. He's had some bumps and bruises in the past, but as much as I hate to give Todd Haley credit, you know, his offense that he implemented a few years ago has really kept Ben clean. So he hasn't been beaten up like he was earlier in his career. So I think he'll actually make a recovery and try to come back for one last run, which we didn't discuss. And I think this fallout is maybe greater than, for next season at least, than Ben coming off of injury. Is the Steelers, you know, just traded away their first round pick to the Dolphins for Minkah Fitzpatrick, who I like, but I think they could have really kept that pick and used it to build, you know, maybe grab another top-notch receiver, or, you know, or another player now that they may not finish as well as they thought they were. So I think that's really going to come back to haunt the Steelers in the future, especially with Ben being in his later years and them not having, you know, access to the weapons or the salary cap room to go out and get, you know, a big time weapon. But I think he does come back, and I do think you'll see Big Ben at least one more time or one more season in a Steeler uniform. And another reason for that is they just gave him like a huge extension, so he's going to come back for a lot of that money.
Yeah, I think he'll come back too. I know it's a pretty serious injury, but I think he'll come back, play at least one more year. And Chad brings up the trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick. Where we will get to it later in the episode, so I like how you tease that, Chad. Very nice. Well played. Well played, sir.
Anytime, man. That's what I'm here for.
Hey, quick yes or no. Is this Tomlin's last year in Pittsburgh?
Go ahead, Donato.
I mean, I think it depends on how they end up here. The Steelers
Let's say they go 8-8 and miss the playoffs. His last year in Pittsburgh?
I don't think so. Nope.
Chad, you think it's his last year in Pittsburgh if they go 8-8?
No, I don't think it's his last year, but I think an 8-8 season or anything less than that, which honestly, you guys are being very, very optimistic with 8-8. At this point, I don't see them going, what is that? What would that be, like 8-6 the rest of the way? I don't see them doing that with Mason Rudolph. But no, I think because of this injury, he'll get another shot. If they went 8-8 with Ben, that could be it for Tomlin, but I think because of the injury, it may buy him a little leeway, and give him another chance with Ben healthy and, you know, the team kind of able to reload.
All right. Well, the bottom line is at least you guys don't have Landry Jones playing. So that's good. So let's go to another quarterback that's been actually dominating the NFL early on, and that's Dak Prescott. And he's made headlines this offseason with people just kind of pouring on whether or not he's worth max contract money for a quarterback. But I think he's really shut everybody up in the early season with how he's played so far. So, guys, the question to you is, just based on how Dak and the Cowboys have looked, do you think that his play has been enough to silence those critics that say he's not worth the max contract? And also, second part to that question, former quarterback Carson Palmer was quoted as saying that Dak should take a discount to make between $10 to $15 million per year in order to get other players on his team paid. So, is Dak silencing the critics? And second question is, was Carson Palmer out of line or correct for saying what he said about Dak Prescott?
Well, to me, we've spoken about this before with his contract. I had already said that I thought he was worth the next big contract of 30.
Oh, just, you were the only million. One that said he was worth the big contract?
No, but you threw the question out and I'm answering it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just your know, answer is going
to
be
I just know how you like to steal similar. Notes and you like to steal credit. So I'm just making sure that you're not saying you're the only one that said Dak was worth the max deal.
I don't believe I did, but I did say it. So I'm not wrong there.
Got to keep you in
and
line.
And that's on record. So you can go back. The listeners can go back. Chad can go back and listen to that episode where we talk about Dak's possible big contract and if he was worth $40 million. I'm pretty sure I said no. He's worth somewhere between 30 and 35, which I still believe that. And, I mean, what do they say? Like, haters are going to hate. I mean, the critics are always going to doubt him as long as Zeke is in his backfield. So they're always going to say he's not worth it. It's all Zeke. But, I mean, listen, through the first two games, he's thrown for 674 yards, 7 touchdowns, only 1 pick, passer rating of 142.9. I mean, that is pretty good. They've already beaten the Redskins in their division. Giants are 0-2. Skins are 0-2. Eagles are barely 1-1. So, I mean, he should have silenced them already, but if not, these first two games are a great way to ease all the pressure, get people off his back. So they should get off of his back and silence the critics, but they'll never be silenced. As far as your second part of the question, really quick, does it really matter what Carson Palmer says? I mean, I can't believe you really wanted to talk about this, JT, but I think you're still sour over the fantasy football trade we had a couple years ago where I think I hosed you in that deal.
Oh, hold but on. Anyway, time out. Can you say that again? Because I want that on official record with an actual in-house witness, because you're always pushing this narrative that I'm this shiesty, you know, person that makes bad deals in fantasy. Every time I trade with you, I lose. You literally traded Carson Palmer to me. He got hurt that same week. Oh, and by the way, you got Alvin Kamara in return when he was turned into a superstar. So I'm glad we got this on record, because every time you mention that, I'm just going to bring up this tape.
As someone who partakes in that league every year and somehow sees some type of lopsided trade go down, I can testify that, yeah, that's happened one too many times in that league. And next time I might walk out or go on strike or something, man, because it's always something ridiculous.
He ain't going Chad, nowhere. He'll be back.
Chad, you're not going anywhere. Nowhere. Could call it. Quit already, trying to have him call your bluff.
I just he had to put it on record.
Keeper for next year.
Okay. Well, to go back to that, listen, $15 million would be way too low to take per year. I mean, that's ridiculous. Even when Carson Palmer was quarterback, $15 million a year was way too low. So, I mean, as a QB, I guess I would always like take advice from guys before me, like, for example, Carson Palmer, especially. He could have had better teams around him, I guess, if he took less money. So maybe he is talking from experience. But $15 million, no. If he wanted to say $25, $23, $24 million, okay, I can get that. I can understand that. Maybe that $10 million goes to Amari Cooper. But $15 million? Oh, that's ridiculous.
That's like half. No, that's like
he
half
should not
of the,
listen to it.
Half yeah. of the lower end of what he would be signing for. That's insane.
Exactly. Yeah. So no, he should not take that advice.
Chad, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'll keep it short and sweet, because obviously I agree with Donato on this one. Dak is definitely worth being the next up. He's a young quarterback. He does a great job both on and off the field. He commands that offense. Until they got Amari Cooper, he didn't have a lot of weapons at receiver. He has Jason Witten, who personally, and this may be a hot take or controversial, I think he's one of the most overrated players in the history of the NFL.
Oh, you ain't lying.
But other than that, he definitely needs to get paid. He's versatile, cool under pressure. For a player who wasn't drafted in the first round, I think he surpassed all expectations. And the only thing he really needs to do to prove his worth, I guess, to other people or critics, I guess you could say, would be just winning the playoffs. And Dallas has finally got a defense to help him out. So I see that. I see that going down. Real quick on the other part, Carson Palmer broke the number one rule as far as NFL players and athletes go. It's trying to, you know, stop the man from getting money. I don't know why he would say that. All the contracts that Carson Palmer had in his career, big time contracts, and, you know, all the injuries he had, how injury riddled he was throughout his career. It's kind of ironic that he's speaking on Dak and his money, a guy that's never been injured, that actually plays a more physical style quarterback than Carson Palmer and still stays healthy, that Carson would speak on that. And last but not least, I have to just throw in a little bit of finance, but the Cowboys are valued at $5.5 billion. I think they're like the number one NFL franchise as far as value goes. And last time I checked, quarterback is the most important position on the field. So for someone to say the most important player in the most important position on the highest valued team should take less than the max is ridiculous to me. That guy, he deserves to get paid. Somebody pay that man.
No, I absolutely
Before you go, two things there. I mean, one, there is a salary cap, Chad. So, you know, they do need to play kind of walk a fine line there because they've signed a lot of their young good guys like Zeke, was it Jalen Smith? So, you know, they can't throw the whole bank, as Jalen Ramsey says, they can't really throw the whole Brinks truck up because that could affect the team and how they build it. And going back to Carson Palmer, while he may be out of line saying that, maybe there's some truth of him speaking it, because maybe now looking back on his career, he thinks, I signed a couple big contracts. Maybe had I taken less in another one of those contracts, Cincinnati or Oakland or Arizona could put even a better team around me had I taken a little less money.
I could guarantee you that is not going through Carson Palmer's mind. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to stop this young quarterback from making the same mistakes I made and making all the money I can while I can make it. I'm pretty sure that's not what was going through his head. And, Chad, I think you made great points about Palmer, and I'm going to start with him. I do think it was out of line. He broke the number one rule. You don't count somebody else's pockets. And I just think it's inappropriate timing, and it's inappropriate that I think that he picked Dak Prescott out of all people to be vocal about in his contract, because everybody knows this is how it goes. Whether you're an elite quarterback, an above average quarterback, or a starting quarterback, when you're the next guy up, they just got to pay you that money. It's just next man up. So I didn't hear Carson Palmer talking about, oh, Jared Goff should take $15 million, Carson Wentz should take $15 million, oh, Kirk Cousins, that $86 million that's guaranteed, fully guaranteed, yeah, just take $15 million. Like, he didn't say that when those guys were up for those deals.
Totally agree with that.
And he's, yeah.
Well, exactly. Hold on.
He's saying that about a guy in Dak who, in my opinion, and you can go back to the other show, I said that I made a case where he's been better than any of those guys throughout his career. Now, go ahead, Donato. What were you going to say?
Well, what I was going to say was, with those guys, Carson Wentz was having an MVP season before he got injured, and then his team went on to win a Super Bowl. The other guy you mentioned, Jared Goff, already had a team around him, got to a Super Bowl last year. Kirk Cousins was technically a free agent. So why, when you're a free agent, would you take less money? Now, if Dak doesn't sign with Dallas, he goes gets $40 million from, oh, I don't know, the Chicago Bears, that's why it's free agency. But if you already have a team around you that is good but not able to get over the hump yet, you take a little less now, knowing that we can keep this nucleus together. They're young. We'll eventually get to the Super Bowl. I think – I'm not saying this is what Carson Palmer's thinking, but that could possibly be the way you see the advice he was trying to give Dak.
I know you're trying – I know you. You're a nice guy. You're trying to, you know, put that nice positive spin on it. But let's be real. Carson Palmer said this because – he's just piling on to the narrative that a lot of people in the media believe that Dak's just not good and he's not a franchise quarterback. And that's why I'm going to answer that second part of that first part of the question is, absolutely, he silenced all the critics. I mean, I think I was reading somewhere where I think he set an NFL record for the most completions in like his first two games. And I think since the beginning of last year, he has the most completions in the NFL. And the Cowboys, with the way he's playing, to me, they look like the most complete team in the NFL. So he's definitely proven that he's worth it. And another thing that I noticed, and I know it's only two games, but I feel the way that he's progressed and the way that he's playing, it's making people rethink the narrative that, oh, the Cowboys, they only go as far as Zeke takes them, and Zeke's the driver of that offense. I'm forgetting Zeke's even on the field right now. And Zeke just put up a 100-yard rushing game last week, and I forgot he was even on the field. It's all about Dak. He's making plays. He's throwing dimes. He's throwing these long touchdown passes. He's not turning the ball over like he normally does. High completion percentage. He's stiff-arming cornerbacks like sorry-ass Josh Norman. And this also goes back to what I said when we had this conversation on a previous episode. I think the only thing that was really missing from him, and Chad, you made a good point about Amari Cooper being inserted to the team. He's a good receiver. But also, too, it's not Dak's fault that they had just a boring-ass offense. It was very vanilla. And now this kid, Kellen Moore, is in the building calling plays, and it looks like a completely different team, and it's really suiting Dak. So I think the sky's the limit for him and the Cowboys. And, yeah, he's absolutely proven that he's worth the money and silencing the critics.
Yeah, I've always been a Dak fan.
Always.
Always since that first preseason game where he got the start, I believe, in the LA Coliseum. All I'm saying is, though, that it is nice to have Zeke. There's no doubt.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree. I think Dak has progressed, but let's not just sweep Zeke under the rug. Defenses are still keying on him, even in these first two games where he hasn't been the Zeke of old.
It's nice to have Sean McVay too.
Yeah,
it's nice to have him. It's nice to have the Eagles' offensive line and their defensive line. It's nice to have that too. Well, Kirk Cousins, it's nice to have those two receivers and Dalvin Cook back there running the rock. So it's really nice to have that too.
Could Donato's take on Carson Palmer be because they kind of have a resemblance? Could that be it?
Oh, see, he's giving you a compliment with that one. I don't see that.
What? Nice hairline, handsome. I'm throwing all the positives. All right,
I'll take that. I don't think we look alike, but those damn are the sure features you think he has.
Well, they do have thing in common. They have that one gimpy knee. So I can see it.
Yeah. Yep. I think it's the left knee too.
Man, I just had to throw it out there. Go ahead.
All right. Hey, I appreciate that, Chad. Man, I'll take that as a compliment.
Well, and also, before you go on, one more final thing on Palmer, man. I can't take seriously a guy that's quit on teams in football just because he didn't want to play. And then, in my opinion, you guys can say I'm wrong. I think he's one of the most overrated, overhyped QB prospects of all time. So, that's just me, but go ahead.
Well, let's move on because let's not bash Carson Palmer.
No, let's bash him.
More than we have. One topic I've wanted to talk about with this episode was the instant replay with pass interference. It's causing a lot of stir, especially with what happened in the Steelers-Seahawks game and a couple other plays in the first of week one of the NFL. So, JT, the new instant replay for challenging pass interference. Do you like the instant replay rule for pass interference that they've implemented this year, mainly due to the Rams-Saints NFC Championship game?
No, because I think what people thought was going to change is, in fact, made it worse. Like, to me, the refs are getting way too much of the spotlight of the game. And every time I watch a game and I see somebody make a positive play, I'm just looking to see that little yellow ticker at the bottom of the screen because I know it's going to be a flag. And like, to New Orleans, thank you. Thank you so much. All of your bitching has officially ruined the NFL. Like, this is what you wanted, and this is what you got. Now the referees are going to challenge everything. And it's stupid because, like, if you think about it, you're trying to micromanage something that's just naturally imperfect. And it's done by people that are, you know, just going to have imperfect judgment. So if somebody makes that call, It's a call, like I saw it from my perspective. So now you got somebody else coming to challenge that call and say, well, I might not agree with you. I saw it this way. And it's just a mess. And then on top of that, to add insult to injury, they're spending their time on these calls when they're missing obvious calls. Like, quarterbacks are getting decked. There's obvious headshots. There's obvious holding, you know, et cetera. They're missing those calls just trying to make sure they get these PI calls just to make sure we don't have a situation where everybody's, you know, putting them on blast for missing that egregious play call in the Saints game last year. So I don't know, man. I feel like reviews should just be for objective plays like scoring and like PI. You know, it's hard sometimes, unless it's obvious. Like, scoring should be the only one that I feel like should be, you know, instant replay. I just think they're going to change that rule next year because this is a mess right now.
So, Chad, as a Steeler fan, because, you know, they had a pass interference called against them after Pete Carroll challenged a non-call on a pretty deep pass against the Seahawks in week two. What do you think about the instant replay rule with pass interference?
Well, first and foremost, that call to me was BS. It was still an up in the air call. Not to get in my feelings about the game, but it was a 50-50 call, and the fact that it wasn't called on the field and that it was still pretty, it was that close that they went back and changed it was crazy to me. And honestly, my whole take on this review for penalty calls is that it's just going to open Pandora's box. Because what's next? Okay, now we're reviewing pass interference calls. What if there's a sweep around the end? You know, the Cowboys and Ezekiel Elliott, he's always bouncing it outside. So now, next year, you know, when they come up with the rules committee and everyone meets in the offseason, are they going to start challenging holdings? Or are they going to be able to challenge other things like illegal contact rules? Things that, you know, no matter how small they are, can change the course of a game. And when you get in the business of always being able to challenge penalties, which are judgment calls in the first place, you know, not only do you slow down the flow of the game, but you kind of take a lot of the necessity for the officials out of it all, because now you got 12 different guys reviewing it back at the, you know, the league office, and they're giving their inputs to the ref on the field. So although I like the fact that they're trying to get these calls right, I agree with what JT said, is that one bad call in the playoffs, which unfortunately, you know, cost the Saints a trip to the Super Bowl, has kind of changed the landscape of the NFL for now, and I'm not a big fan of it.
I feel like I'm the only one that I know of on this other side where I like being able to challenge penalties, and I think they should expand. You talk about opening Pandora's box, open it. People thought that with instant replay to begin with. And now look, everyone loves the instant replay part that helps gets the calls right. And until it's your team that gets screwed in the championship game or a Super Bowl for a penalty that could easily be reversed by reviewing it, for example, the Saints. JT, if that happened to your Dolphins, you would be pissed. You haven't won a Super Bowl in 40 years, 50, I believe.
We don't want to win one this year, so no, I wouldn't be pissed.
But what happens? What happens if it? What about if it happens in 5 years?
No, I get you.
The Jets haven't won a Super Bowl in 50 years. They haven't been one. They haven't even been the one in 50 years. What if they get screwed in the AFC Championship game or a playoff divisional game that they were the number one seed? Like, what happened to the Steelers this past week, I had no problem. To me, that was clear pass interference. He went up for the pass. He got his jersey pulled, did a pirouette 360, couldn't catch the ball. What else? What other definition of pass interference is there right there? I don't know. Like, that's clear pass interference to me.
Yeah,
but I hate that it happened against my team, but they got it right.
But the thing is, kind of like what I was saying before, the whole reason this went into effect was the Saints weren't mad that, oh, you missed a pass interference penalty. Is just you missed the obvious penalty that you should have called. And it's so ironic. They did all this complaining and then they got screwed again, which I think, other than Breeze getting hurt, really changed the game when they sacked Jared Goff and he fumbled the ball and they were going to have an easy scoop and score. And they called it down. Like, why would you not just let the guy score? Scoring okay, plays are reviewed anyway.
But that's different now. We're talking about this pass interference rule. What does that have to do with the pass interference rule?
No, but I'm just saying, though, like, I felt like the reason the Saints complained, it wasn't the fact they didn't want it to be just pass interference. It just happens to be that play that screwed them out of the Super Bowl last year should have been a pass interference. And
they wanted it to be pass interference because that's what they got screwed on. They could care less about holding right now. Their thing was pass interference, and they got it changed.
Yeah, but it's ruining the league.
How is it? This is the thing. Everyone thinks it's this widespread epidemic. How is it? You get two challenges per game. If you get both of those right, you get a third. If you get both of those right,
did you watch the Packers versus the Vikings game? Like, at least three touchdowns got called back because of that. Like, it was insane.
But if it – now, this is the difference. If they're reviewing it and they're not holding it to the standard in the new rules that the committee put together, that's one thing. If they're interpreting the instant replay rule incorrectly, that's one thing. But if – you're just upset that, oh, they're changing touchdowns. But if it's really clear pass interference, then why can they not go back and call it pass interference?
No, I understand that. I just think that it's madness to think that something that somebody has to make a judgment call on, if they make it, that's the whole goal of the refs. We see something, we make a call on it. If they don't call it, obviously they didn't see it. And then you have somebody else coming in challenging that judgment,
but that is
and that's the way they see it, you know. So the first guy that called it, his judgment wasn't good enough. So now we got to have this other guy come in, and those two guys might have two totally different definitions of. Oh, I thought that was PI. I didn't think that was PI.
But my understanding is it's got to be one of those that's egregious, right? It's clear and obvious that it's pass interference. It's not just hand checking or hand slapping that they're going to call. I agree with you. If they start turning those non-calls into PIs, yes. But like the Seattle Steeler one, that was pass interference and they didn't call it. You missed it as a ref. You did a terrible job. I'm going to correct it if I'm the Seahawks by throwing this flag. And only get two challenges a game. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
Donato, I mean, I know this is kind of related to this rule, but remember the Jesse James catch from like two seasons ago, and how after that play transpired, although it wasn't a playoff game, it was a late regular season game, which led to home field advantage throughout the playoffs. They changed that rule because of that play after that season. To me, as a Steeler fan, it doesn't make me feel any better about, you know, that happening. But No, go ahead.
Go ahead, Finn. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, so I think that's what the Saints fans were trying to get at. You know, they were just kind of angry and very upset that play, you know, cost them a trip to the Super Bowl. But I don't think in my opinion, we're necessarily making the game any better by reviewing. I know you have a difference of opinion on it, but I just still think it's up. It's so... it's a rule that's
fickle.
It's up for interpretation.
It's so fickle.
And it's always going to be somebody's judgment.
Is it real? But this is the thing.
You're asking guys that already are making mistakes that people at home can see to ask an even bigger idiot who makes mistakes to come in and argue about that. But I get what you're saying. I just feel like this rule is going to spiral out of control. And I would not be surprised if they get rid of it next year.
But this is the thing. Why can't you challenge an offside? I've told you this before, JT. I think every coach should get two challenges plus an extra one just for a penalty.
That's because you just want to give your little flag football teams a second chance to win the game. That's why you want that.
But you should be able to challenge offside, false start, delay of game. I told you,
birth certificate.
How many delay of games do they miss? How many delay of games do they miss?
I agree with you on that.
They should have a watch that buzzes as soon as it hits zero. 100%. They don't even need to look at the ball or the clock, and they throw 100%. The flag. Why can't I challenge that?
Yeah, that definitely cost 100%. The Steelers the game last week.
Exactly. Thank you. There was multiple times, at least once, I think multiple times, where Russell Wilson had the play clock down to double zero. No flag. How does that happen? We are in 2019. We have 50 million different camera angles. We have all this technology, and we cannot figure out a way.
Except for the one camera angle that we need to determine whether his feet were in.
Exactly. And we can't figure out how the ref can still miss a delay of game. Everyone in the stadium can see it except the refs. I don't get
it.
That's so annoying.
But to me, I don't think you need a review for a delay. You shouldn't need a review for a delay game. There should be somebody up in the booth that's looking at that and able to tell that it was delay or game or not. I think pass interference is a little different because there's certain refs that will call it two different ways. And I just don't know if you keep reviewing this, if it's going to fix the problem. But I guess this is something we're just going to have to agree to disagree on.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's a work in progress for the NFL. So I was fired up about that topic. I know clearly, JT, the clearly. Next topic. I know JT, the next topic you're going to get fired up about. So I'll let you go with
it. Not too much, because I'm actually happy about it. So you guys kind of already alluded to this. The Dolphins are doing their best Philadelphia 76ers impersonation. And we're clearly tanking regardless of what management and our head coach Brian Flores says. But I want to ask you guys, so they've been making a ton of moves, just accumulating draft capital. So most recently we just traded our former first round pick DB Minka Fitzpatrick to the Steelers for, I don't know how we got a first round pick for him, but we now have 3 first round picks in next year's draft, 2 second round picks in next year's draft. In the 2021 draft, we have 2 first round and 2 second round picks. And the good thing about the draft pick that we just acquired for Minka, that's the first rounder this year, is if the Steelers are going to play as bad as you guys think they are, then that's a top 10 pick too, and we're going to be the worst team in the league. So guys, my question to you is, are the Dolphins making the correct move by doing this? Obvious tanking. And what are your thoughts on the players that are demanding trades out of Miami because they don't want to be a part of that rebuilding process? I actually want to go to Chad first. I want his thoughts on this.
Yeah, so obviously with my I have a couple family members that are diehard Dolphin fans. Obviously some good friends that are big-time Dolphin fans. So, you know, this is a topic that I discuss on a frequent basis, and especially this offseason, during the preseason and now during the beginning of the regular season, because it's pretty much unprecedented that I remember in the history of the NFL, a team really letting the players go out and seek trades to other teams before they're even like out of playoff contention. I mean, by week one, you would have thought the Dolphins were like 0-14 already. It's kind of hilarious to me. But at the end of the day, if that's their goal, to acquire draft capital, to acquire picks and rebuild over the years, I think they're doing a great job of it. And by having, 3 first-round picks next year, 2 the following year, and then a combined, 4 second-round picks in both of those drafts.
Yeah, and we're not done yet.
Yeah, I mean, who knows who else can get traded? So they're definitely building. Yeah, that's true. They're definitely building a case to have a very solid young nucleus for years to come. My only question is though, like, despite all that draft capital and having all these good young players, top 15 picks, do you have the leadership in place to mold those players? Because I mean, a lot of these guys that are demanding trades on the roster right now aren't that old. These aren't wily vets. These are young guys that you think would be coachable, would be willing to, you know, to, with the new regime, learn a new scheme because the previous scheme wasn't working for them. And I'm just worried that, you know, despite all this acquired draft capital, that you just don't have the right leadership in place to turn that into something productive. So that's my only worry. I do actually hope that they do well with it, because God forbid somebody knock off the Patriots in that division sometime in the next century. But
yeah, because Brady's playing until he's 50, so we need these draft picks.
I mean, anything you guys can do. But yeah, that's my take on it. I hope it works out for him. I think it's a smart move if you know you're not going to win. But I'm just not – I wouldn't bet the bank that it's going to work out.
I would say go ahead.
I forgot, JT, this is your team. I'll go last. Go ahead.
No, my thing is this, is that – obviously, we don't know this for a fact, but I feel like the Dolphins, A, we have a plan, which is more than we usually have, so I'm all in on that. And you can tell that, you know, people, the fans here locally in Miami, the one thing that I've noticed that's not going on is, trust me, they bash the Dolphins every week when we go 8-8, they bash us. Everybody's excited down here, nobody's complaining, because it seems like we have a plan, it seems like we know what we're doing. I believe that 2 things are going on. I believe that Flores only took this job because management assured him, look, this is what we're going to try to do. We believe that you're the right person for this job. You come from an organization where we trust your judgment, and we're going to give you time. And I feel like him being on board was the only way that we were able to get him to come be the head coach of the Dolphins. So that's one of the things I thought that's happened behind the scenes. Also, too, I think what the Dolphins are doing, even though it's a very dangerous game, I think the reason we're acquiring all these picks is we are trying to make sure we make the right decision between Tua or Trevor Lawrence the following season. Because I'm not so sure that the Dolphins are all in on Tua. Everybody's saying tank for Tua. I think what they're trying to do is set it up to where we can have a shot at getting Trevor Lawrence. And I believe he's eligible in the 2021 draft. And if we land him, all this will be worth it. Because that dude's probably the best quarterback prospect I've seen since Peyton Manning. So if that's the case, I'm all on board with that. Now, as far as the players demanding trades, I guess I understand because the NFL career is already short as is, and you don't have time to be wasting that on games that people are trying to lose on purpose. But imagine your ego in that situation. Like, the Dolphins are clearly trying to lose and have the worst team in NFL history, but we feel like you're good enough to be on this roster. We really want you to be here. Like, that's got to be an ego check. Like, you're good enough to be on this sorry all-time team. So I can see why they want to be out and demand trades. And I feel like anybody who wants to be traded, we should do that. We should trade in for what we can get. Like I said, I think Kenyon Drake's probably next. If we can get a fourth-round pick for him, great. I was shocked that we got a first-rounder for Minka. He literally went one pick after Josh Rosen, and the Cardinals barely got a second-round pick in return for him, and he was a quarterback. So I don't know how the Dolphins are shysting people like this and getting all these picks, but keep it up. I'm all for it.
Well, I don't mind tanking. Like, I thought what the Sixers did was great. Like, you had to do that. That's how you build it in the NBA. But in the NFL, that's not necessarily how you always build it, especially if you have a track record like the Dolphins. Like, they don't always make the right pick.
Our last two drafts have been good.
Doesn't matter. History of it. Deion Jordan, that's enough said. All right?
Different regime.
I don't like
Teddy Ginn.
How the Finns are different trading. But this
Ted Ginn was a terrible pick.
What is the new regime? Is this the same regime that drafted Fitzpatrick and Tunzel?
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't believe in yourself. You're trading guys that you thought were good enough to be a first-round pick. Now you're trading proven guys. Tunzel's legit. So is Fitzpatrick.
He's so legit, Deshaun Watson got smacked for 6 sacks in the opening game against the Saints.
Were all 6 given up by Tunzel?
He sure looked like it.
It doesn't matter. If it's not him, he can't help what the right tackle does. He can't help what the right guard does. All right? So you're acting like all of a sudden Tunzel's garbage. He's the next Eric Flowers.
No, I'm not saying he's garbage.
Yes, you are.
No.
You're acting like Fitzpatrick can't cover me or you on a football field. That's ridiculous.
I know he can't cover you. You're shocking,
well,
man. He can't cover
more
you.
More like I could get open, but you couldn't. So Fitzpatrick, he's listed as like the number one slot corner in the league. So now you're just because you got rid of them for first round picks, you just are now throwing those guys to the wayside when they're proven NFL quality players. And you're forgetting Fitzpatrick's in his second year. Tunzel's in his third year. Those are guys that were top 10, top 5 talent that you got outside of the top 10 that fell to you. And now you're just saying, oh, we don't need them. Let's go for an unproven Tua, an unproven Trevor Lawrence. Everyone thought Ryan Leaf was the second coming of John Elway. Guess what? It didn't work out. And the other thing, too, at some point you need a foundation. You had it. You had a left tackle. You had a cornerback. And you have a quarterback that was a top 15 pick who you traded a second round for in Rosen. And now it seems like he won't be on your roster much longer either. And if you trade guys like Drake, quality NFL running back, at some point you need to have a foundation. And if you go get a foundation in 2021, guess what? That's 2 years away. That is way too long to gamble like this. They're making a huge mistake. They're getting good picks back. But like Chad said, you don't know what those are going to turn out to be. You don't know what if Trevor Lawrence has a career-ending injury this season, next season? Dolphins are stuck with no quarterback. They don't take Tua. They get rid of Rosen. They've got the next Ryan Fitzpatrick back there, 35-year-old. Career backup quarterback going into 2021.
Well,
as long as
it's not Jay Cutler, I don't care. But no, I mean, you made good points. But the thing is, I think the reason that the Dolphins have this viewpoint is because you got to understand, we've been in the division with the Patriots forever. Like, they've literally watched. The only difference between New England and most teams is Tom Brady. And it's proof that if you don't have, and you look at other teams around the league, especially in the AFC, if you don't have that franchise signal caller that's legit, you don't have a shot. And the Dolphins have willed their way to 8-8 seasons forever with just a bad group of quarterbacks. And I feel like they know we need to get one, and they know these next two drafts are where we can get those game changers. And it might be somebody else. I'm just saying, if I were them, Tua and Lawrence would be the obvious two I'd be looking at. But you need to get talent on the team. And the thing is, I didn't want to see some of these players go. Like, I told you, I didn't want us to trade Tunsil. I thought he was good. But if somebody's going to give up a first-round pick for him, I'm entertaining that. We're not winning with him. Minka Fitzpatrick, I didn't want him to go either. But if somebody's going to give up a first-round pick, a high first-round pick, according to what you guys think the Steelers are going to do, I absolutely think it's worth it. You have to take that shot.
I said 8-8. I said 8-8. That'll get you 15, 16 overall.
I said you
pick.
Guys
now,
win
they
five
do worse,
games.
Of course.
I think you guys win five games. It's a 3-game difference. It's still a good
okay,
pick.
Okay, so maybe you get a top 10. That's still not going to be a top 3 pick if they got 5-6 wins. But the thing is, you're getting rid of first round guys. I can understand if you traded away Kenny Stills, Devontae Parker for first round picks.
Don't nobody want Devontae Parker.
I would understand that. I would understand. Like, who's the next guy? Xavien Howard? Great. Now you have no team and a bunch of rookies. Like Chad said, who's there to help him? And not only that, you're gambling on guys that you don't know about. Howard's proven. Fitzpatrick seems to be proven. Tunzel's proven. Maybe Tunzel's not Jonathan Ogden or Bocelli, but he's a darn pretty good left tackle.
Yeah, I gotta agree.
Where are you gonna get those?
I gotta agree with Donato on that. I mean, that's the one thing about acquiring draft capital and getting rid of proven guys. Fitzpatrick and Tunzel both had Pro Bowl potential, and I mean although like I said, I like the picks. I like getting the picks if it's just not a fit, but. Again, it's the leadership and the people that are making decisions that worry me the most. Because even though you got those picks, who's to say that the next guy's not going to want to be traded out? You know, so it's just a gamble that you're taking.
No, it's risk. It's absolutely a risk. No, I get it. And one more thing, like I absolutely agree. Like, and that's the whole point of this. It's risk reward. And I think with Fitzpatrick, the thing that was unique about his situation is he had wanted to leave Miami before this whole tanking thing, just because. He felt that we were playing him out of position. So he was trying to, you know, low-key get out of Miami. Like, his mom was coming out in the media saying, you know, they're not using him right. So I felt like his situation was going to come to a head regardless of whether we were going this direction or not. I hate to see him go. But, I mean, if we're not using him right, I mean, I would love to, you know, a first-round pick is the best that you can get for him. Tunsil, like I said, I didn't want to see him go, but a first-round pick, yeah. Yeah,
so
I feel
JT,
like that's the way
know,
to go.
I know we got to go to the next topic, but let me remind you of how you felt on draft night when you guys got Tunsil and then you got Fitzpatrick. I clearly remember how excited you were. Part of the reason was these were talented guys that fell in the draft for whatever reason, but it wasn't because of necessarily their skill or they weren't good enough. Whatever reason they fell, and you were pumped because you literally got top 10, top 5 talent outside of the top 10. Remember that feeling, okay? Because now you're just throwing them to the wayside. Oh, the grass is greener on the other side. Oh, my goodness. We have no idea where we're going to pick in 2020, 2021, but I'm excited for it. Meanwhile, that's the way you felt last year, 2 years ago when you drafted these guys.
Yeah, one last thing. I hear what you're saying, but – you know, things change. I just saw Fitzpatrick get roasted by Hollywood Brown. Hopefully he doesn't do the same for you guys.
You just said they were playing him out of position, but go ahead. Next topic.
Oh, now you want to agree with me. Well, let's go, the Dolphins are doing Dolphin things. Hopefully they get it together. I have faith. Well, let's go to two guys that I would have loved for us to draft, but we just didn't have the opportunity to. Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray. So the two young quarterbacks are clearly, you know, taking the league by storm. Jackson's just on another level right now. He's definitely not anti-Drake. And then Murray's looked good through his first two NFL games. So my question to you guys is, who would be your bet between these two guys as being the quarterback of the future in the NFL?
I guess I can.
Go ahead, Chad. I'll let you go first, Chad.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll take that one. Mainly because there's, as JT knows, there's someone in our our circle of friends that is completely anti-mobile, running.
He's anti any good player.
Yeah, any good player of a certain ilk, he just won't agree that they're a viable NFL quarterback. But anyways, that's besides the point. So honestly, this is I like this topic because I see both of these guys as A and A1 when it comes to young quarterbacks. I think Lamar Jackson brings a pretty dynamic style to the table. Essentially, I think he said it in his interview after, the first game of the season, not too bad for a running back, but essentially he is a running back. Like, the guy is a weapon. He can run, he can make people miss, he can beat safeties and linebackers to the corner. He's a talent that we may not have seen, since Michael Vick, as far as his speed goes. He's a legit, high 4.3 guy who, honestly, I went back and watched the highlights of the first 2 weeks of the season. He's also a great pocket passer. This guy can drop back. Yeah, he can drop back, and he's dropping precision passes, not dink and dunk 3 and 4 yard passes. He's dropping 40 yard dimes down the field, and he's doing it with receivers who, who has the casual NFL fan ever heard of Hollywood Brown? Has the casual NFL fan ever heard of Mark Andrews? I mean, he's making pedestrian guys who may be good one day, maybe because of him, look really good, putting up Pro Bowl stats right now. So I think there's no doubt right now after 2 weeks. I know it's premature, but he's in the MVP discussion with a guy like Mahomes just based on what he's doing, not only with his legs, with his arm. Kyler Murray is someone who surprised me a little bit. I always believed in him out of college. I thought he did a great job at Oklahoma, but I didn't think he would hit it off this quick in the NFL. And he's really surprising me because he's also making some really big plays. I think he's showing as a smaller quarterback, he's kind of like Russell Wilson in the fact that he finds angles to get the ball out without being obstructed by his line or the defense. And he's doing a great job at it. And he's also, I'm seeing him avoid contact and throw the ball away or run out of bounds. So that's smart. But I guess if I had to choose, I'd go with Lamar Jackson just because last year he took the Ravens on that run. They won how many games in a row? He's going to have
the last 10.
Yeah, he's going to have the support of a great defense where Kyler Murray's kind of on a team that's rebuilding right now. They have a rookie head coach. And I don't know about their offensive line. He has a good running back. I don't know if Johnson's going to put up big numbers again. So I'd have to go with Lamar Jackson. But again, I see both of their arrows pointing up, and I don't think you can go wrong with the choice of either one of those two guys.
I just don't like having small QBs. So like, if I really had to pick an answer, I would say neither, just because look at just what history tells us. RG3, even Michael Vick was not a small guy. Cam Newton is not a small guy.
That's the biggest guy on the planet. Breaking down.
I know, and he's breaking down. Now, I do like what you said there, Chad. Kyler Murray already seems to understand, hey, I got to get out of bounds. I got to throw the ball away. Where we saw with RG3, just didn't slide early on. Cam Newton, big body. I would do the same thing. Run some guys over, right? But as a QB, you just can't do that. So it's not that they're not talented. It's just they're small. I mean, especially Kyler Murray. Like, it only will take 2-3 hits in the course of a 2-week span that Murray's going to be feeling it. This is not college or high school. So if I had to pick one, I would go Kyler Murray, though, because I think his accuracy is better than Lamar Jackson. And right now, the AFC, let's face it, the Ravens have not played good quality teams so far.
Literally the two worst defenses in the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. Eventually, the winter time is going to come in Baltimore. They got to play the Browns twice, the Steelers twice, the Bengals twice. Those are hard-fought games. And then come the winter time, that weather is not 80 degrees and beautiful. Lamar Jackson is used to that. So
he played at Louisville.
He grew up, I think. He played at Louisville.
Yeah, Louisville has great weather in the winter.
But that is definitely not Baltimore. He grew up in South Florida, played at Louisville. Louisville does not have that bad of weather.
It's still cold.
And as defensive coordinators get even more film on Lamar Jackson's new offense, I think they'll figure out how to shut him down. And that's why I like Murray. He's a little bit more accurate, and he's got more of an offensive-minded coach that is going to figure out ways to use his abilities better. But I would pump the brakes just because – Lamar Jackson's played some really bad defenses, and Murray has not shown enough to be like, oh yeah, he's, you know, the QB of the future. This is the way QBs are going to be.
If he outplays Mahomes this weekend in this game, will that change your mind a little bit?
That's a good question. I think it will start to turn me. But let's not say Kansas City. They're not the steel curtain defense either, right? I think we can agree there.
So Kyler Murray over Lamar Jackson?
If I had to pick, yes.
Kyler Murray or Gino Toretta?
Gino all day, but we know that would be that. You know, I'm picking with my heart there. If I'm picking with my mind, of course, it's Kyler Murray.
I got to give you props for the reference to episode 18, man. That was one of my favorites, actually.
See, Chad is a true listener because he even knows what episode that was. The Gino Toretta reference was.
Hey, man, I do my homework before I make appearances. That's all I'm gonna say.
Who the hell says Gino
Toretta? That's more than what JT. That's more than what JT does, and his name's on the show.
He hasn't done his homework since UCF, man, and I don't even know if he did that. He probably had a girl do it for him.
Whoa! Hey!
Hey! That's a long time ago, man. Don't worry.
No, but yeah, you guys both make good points, man. I think before I tell you who I pick, I think the main takeaway for both of these guys is, and I think the reason they'll be successful, kind of going to what some of you guys said about, like, you know, the coaching and the systems, I think they're both playing for coaches that are allowing them to play the way they've always played throughout their entire career, and that style of play has made them successful. So, because, you know, most guys come into the league, you know, you play a certain way, they're like, no, you got to fit into this box. So they're not doing that with these guys, so I think that's helping them, one, have faster starts, and I think it's going to help. It's definitely helped with Lamar. You can definitely tell this year that the game has slowed down for him, which is why he's more comfortable and looks so much better as a passer. And like Chad, to your point, and also Tanato, to your point, Kyler is a beast. I think he's really accurate. I haven't seen him run yet, and I haven't decided whether or not that's a good thing or not. But yeah, he's definitely a smart guy. He knows how to get down. He's really accurate. He knows how to find angles, kind of like Drew Brees, a shorter guy, to make passes downfield. But I'm going to go with Lamar Jackson, and the reason I'm going to choose him is just because he has some things on his side that Kyler doesn't have, and that's a proven coach in Harbaugh, and also his coordinator, Greg Roman, who kind of essentially did the same thing for Colin Kaepernick when he was looking like an MVP candidate. So he has the coaching, and he has the organization with the track record behind it. The Ravens are one of, like, the definition of a well-oiled machine. Like, they're such a good organization. So he's got that behind them, while Kyler has a first-year head coach that people still aren't sure about. Cardinals are a terrible organization, and, oh, yeah, their GM is probably going to be fired at the end of this year. So, and also, you already said it before, like, Lamar's won 8 of the last 10 games. I think he won 6 of those games when he didn't even know what he was doing. Like, they just brought him into a losing situation, and he just willed them to the playoffs. And if they didn't get the Chargers in that game, I believe he could have won it, because that was like the second time in like 3 weeks they had faced each other. So he's improving as an all-around quarterback, especially in the passing game. And he just became the first player to pass for 250 and rush for 120 in an NFL game. Like, it's slowing down for him. It's making sense. And like, I really think if he outduels Mahomes this week when they play the Chiefs, you got to make a legitimate conversation of who's really the MVP. I think Mahomes is really that much better than him right now. But Lamar is really playing at a high level, and I think he would get my early vote for being the future.
But that's my whole point. You said it. When you said, you know, he had to play the Chargers a second time, and that's why they shut him down.
But I feel like in the NFL, teams that plays a rookie two – that never happens. You play a rookie two times in 3 weeks – you're gonna be ready, and the guy. It's not like they had the whole offseason to work.
But that's
work the offense for him. It was for Flacco.
But that's my whole point. Defensive coordinators have had the whole offseason now to see how they use Lamar Jackson,
and the shit's not working. But no, you can't go wrong.
No offense. It was your Miami Dolphins defense that did play them, and they only gave up 43 the next.
But hey,
week,
we had Minkah Fitzpatrick, yeah, a guy that you would not acquire draft unknown. Unproven draft capital potential for. He was out there covering.
He was played out of position.
That's JT's own words. They were playing him out of position. These and guys. Two, Football is the ultimate team game. We all know that.
Tell that to Ben Roethlisberger. A lot of guys
have never won a Super Bowl. Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl. Why? It was not because he wasn't talented. He never had a running game or a defense. Guy couldn't do it all.
Spoken like a purist.
Amen. So let's go to these quick hitters. I doubt we keep these quick. But let's start off. I don't know if you guys, anybody saw this play, but believe it or not, I only watched this play in the end of the Saints in Houston game on a Monday night. I don't know why I saw this play in particular, but and on the opening day when the Giants played the Cowboys, Cowboys cornerback, I hope I say his name right, Chidobe Awuzie was drug tested after running down Saquon Barkley on a 59-yard run, which when I saw it, it looked like it was going to be a touchdown, and then Awuzie came and just hawked him down. So, do you think that the fact that because of that play, Awuzie being drug tested after the game, do you think that's funny or concerning?
Well, first, just so people know, 10 players from each team are randomly selected by a computer to be tested after
the game. NFL just needs to come and hire you right now. You are such a corporate man. You was like, well, in fairness, the law says this.
Well, I'm just saying, just so people understand how it works. So, I don't know. Like, there's 10 players that are selected, randomly selected by this by a computer. So I'm going to say funny because I'm going to trust, and I know this is tough, trust the NFL that they don't do this by specifically targeting certain players. But I do question it in the end because of Eric Reed's drug testing.
I was going to say, Eric Reed just got drug tested again as we're speaking. Yeah.
That definitely was a fishy situation last season.
Yeah, he got tested like 6 of the 7 games, something ridiculous. So I'll say funny, but kind of with like a side eye.
Have you seen
NFL.
This play though?
I actually did not. Even once you told me,
I didn't see the play either.
And then something came.
Go look at this play. You know Barkley, when he hits daylight, he is gone. I mean, Barkley had nobody around him, and this guy just came out of nowhere. It's hawked him down.
But the thing is, he ran a 4.43 40.
It's Barkley with a 20-yard head start.
In the NFL combine, so it's not like Awuzie is this like defensive lineman.
Fox, funny or concerning?
Yeah, I thought it was funny, honestly. There's more pressing issues in the NFL, like one of Antonio Brown's 12 lawsuits against him. So as much as it seems ironic that after that guy, you know, hocked down one of the fastest players, running backs, at least in the NFL, that they drug test him, I still think it's funny. I appreciate Donato explaining the whole process because as much a football fan that I am, I didn't know that's how it worked. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure there's something.
He didn't know either before the show, trust me.
Hey, that's called research, man. I got to respect that. But, you know, I'm sure that there's somebody or some entity in the league office that's watching these games and seeing them do certain things, although these are all, you know, top-notch, world-class athletes. And I doubt it's as random as they make it out to be. I can say that much.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you guys. I thought it was funny. Like I said, I saw the play and I was like, damn, like, how the hell did he catch Saquon? Honestly, if I was in the NFL front office, I'd have drug tested him too right after the game too, so... let's move on to some
JT. Let me add something real quick. It said he was tested Monday though, which it said he was tested Monday from everything I read. So usually they do this right after the game. Like a lot of times, even before they can go to the bathroom as soon as they get in the locker room. So what's weird to me is all the reports I see says he was tested Monday. Which, that's weird. Usually they do it right after the game. So you might be on to something there.
Eric Reed would agree. Sticking with football, we're going to go down to college football. And I feel like this rumor has been floating around for quite some time, and it's just gaining legs as time goes on. So rumors are that Urban Meyer has been recruited to USC by Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart to be the next head coach. Obviously, Meyer is retired right now. But, guys, this story does not seem to be going away. Do you think there's an actual chance that Meyer ends up at USC?
No, he's waiting for Notre Dame, if anything.
Who the hell is waiting for Notre Dame?
He would not go to a rival of Notre Dame, plus the California state tax is too high. Urban Meyer's too smart about things like that.
So he's stupid and cheap. Chad, what you think?
Yeah, I don't see him going to USC. I think he's definitely more of an East Coast, Midwest guy. Notre Dame was probably the only job I agree with the Don. Notre Dame's probably the only job that'll bring him back, just because his upbringing and his history with a lot of the with that program and a lot of the people surrounding it. So I don't see him going to USC, but if he does, I know there's a lot of interesting people out west that would probably love to play for him, if you know what I'm saying. So you know his track history of recruiting less than stand-up people, so we'll see. But no, I think he's an amazing coach, but the ways that he goes about, you know, selecting his players and brushing stuff under the rug is probably one of the biggest controversies in the past 20-something years of college football, for sure.
I mean, let's not act like he hasn't coached out west before. He did coach at Utah, but I agree with you guys. But here's the thing, hear me out. If he did come back to college football, I think this would be a hell of a place to land. Not only are you coming back to USC, let's not act like USC still doesn't have pull in the West Coast or in college football. It's just they don't have the coaching to do it. But he comes in, he'd be the savior of a failing historic program. They'll give him anything he wants, both, you know, financially and resource-wise. Like, anything Urban Meyer needs, they'll give it to him. And right now, the West Coast is wide open for recruiting. And you put a guy like Urban Meyer in a sleeping giant like USC, it's going to be game over. Like, imagine if he starts getting, like, all those hyped-up West Coast quarterback prospects. You see what he does with quarterbacks that aren't that good, and he starts getting all the West Coast talent. If he takes this job, realistically, you got to start thinking that could be the death knell to Nick Saban in Alabama.
You don't think he's scared to compete with Chip Kelly right now?
I don't know. Yeah, he might be a little scared of Chip.
His 1-11 seasons.
Yep, I'm telling you, man.
JT, I disagree with you. Like, USC is the Miami of the West Coast. The facilities are not there. There's not an on-campus stadium. You've got the tradition, but think about it. When have they had a truly great team that could make a run at the national title? Think about it. Pete Carroll. Like, and that was before all these facilities start popping up. You know, Oregon. I mean, you take a kid to an Oregon game, to USC, they don't care about tradition. Yes, you and I do, and Chad do, and our friends do. Like, we take USC in a heartbeat. But these kids nowadays, no way. They're going to Oregon, man. Phil Knight and Nike, dude.
I don't know, no man. I agree. I think if Urban Meyer lands in SC, I think that's going to be a problem. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Why do you think they go through so many ADs? The ADs know what needs to get done, and they can't get it done. Their hands are tied. Pat Hayden, Lynn Swan, he just resigned. It's not working. That's an academic institute that is not going to put all their money into football. Sorry.
We'll see.
All right, so let's stick with college football, and we got to talk about Pitt Penn State.
Oh, my God. Why are we talking about this?
Because it was a great game, and it's one of the best college football rivalries. So,
is that backyard bowl?
No, that's West Virginia Pitt. Get it right. See what I got to deal with?
Man.
I got to deal with an incompetent sport analyst here that doesn't even know what the backyard bowl is.
He has never dissed me this hard. I feel like you're bringing this out of him, because usually he's trying to give me compliments, but he's been mean today. I'll remember this for the next show.
You got me fired up with the pass interference topic.
Clearly, that's on your mind.
So, they're not going to play for at least 8, 9, possibly 10 years. They don't have another game on their schedule against each other. So, this game will be remembered for a while. I'll try to put the score out of my mind. But one thing Pitt fans will not forget is Narduzzi's, who's the Pitt coach, his decision to kick a field goal on 4th and goal at the Penn State 1-yard line late in the fourth, down 17-10. So, fellas, JT, I'll go to Chad first. He's more of my Pittsburgh guy anyway. Was this the correct move by Narduzzi to kick the field goal in that situation?
As the resident Pitt expert on the show, I gotta say, man, first and foremost, this is just another bonehead decision in the long line of bonehead decisions in recent Pitt football. You know, in college, I had to live with Dave Wannstedt as the head coach. I know Dolphin fans, JT in particular, are pretty familiar with Dave. But in the in-game, the constant in-game incompetence that he, you know, that he exhibited over the years, that guy had players like Shady McCoy, and he recruited guys like Aaron Donald and things along those lines, but he could never get his teams to put it together on the field. And I think that's what you're seeing with Narduzzi in some of the decisions he makes. He had a fake punt last year. I want to say it was in the Clemson game, if I could be mistaken. But he did another thing last year that was kind of like this that made me scratch my head. And to be honest, I think it stems from this program, and as much as it being my favorite college football team, as much as it pains me to say it, is they're just irrelevant. And I think there's so much pressure on him to make a splash and win a big game, albeit they did beat Clemson a few years ago, and they beat a Miami team that I thought was a little overrated at the time.
A little.
But all in all, yeah, I think he says all the right things in the media. I think he's a great person. He's a great figurehead of a program. But because he's, you know, a defensive coordinator, a guy that had never really been the man in charge, you see mistakes like this from time to time. And in this situation on 4th and 1, you're in Penn State Stadium. You've actually hung around on a team that was favored by, I think, 17 points. You got to try to punch that in. And even the play calling that led up to that 4th down was horrendous. They tried to run a play action pass in the flats. Then they tried to run a QB sneak. And then they tried to throw it again. And then on 4th down, and being down 7 points, knowing you might not even get the ball back again, you know, you try to kick a field goal, and appropriately enough, you know, it's a doink off the goalpost. You never get the ball back. So actually, they got the ball back, but it was like a pipe dream to tie it up. So yeah, I mean, I thought it was the wrong decision. I think it's even worse that in the media, I don't know if you guys followed it after the fact, he's standing by his decision. He's not questioning himself at all. I think that makes it even worse. And I just hope they clear it up this week, because Penn State beat them by 7. UCF's probably going to beat them by 27, and it's only going to be downhill from there. So that's my take on it. Sorry if I put a little bit too much emotion in this one.
Yeah, he put all his eggs in that basket, I'll tell you that. But no, I agree with you guys. You're playing against an in-state powerhouse. You take the risk. You got nothing to lose. Like you guys said, all the best things, and I agree with that. This is just incomprehensible. You gotta go for it. You have nothing to lose.
Chad, JT limited me to only having one Pitt fan on, because if not, I was ready to have a ton of our in-house
you literally
football
wanted to do the
experts
whole show
along
on
with
this
Chad
one topic. You wanted to do the whole show on this
I did
one topic. You did.
I wanted to do a whole show on this topic, man.
Hey man, I'd be more than happy to come back when you do the Pitt regular season preview next July.
I like that. It just may have to be you, myself, Chad, and like a bunch of other Pitt fans that I know, buddies of mine that can come on. We just won't have JT on for that show.
Cool.
But,
don't invite me to your Facebook group.
I'll call up all my Yinzer family members up in Western Pennsylvania. We'll make it a party.
But I mean, that was not the correct move. It's 4th and 1. You're down a touchdown. And Chad, you brought up a good point that he stood by his decision. His decision was, we came here to win, not to play for overtime. And the thing is, you do realize you kick the one field goal now. You still need a touchdown to score to win. And why not go for it when you're already at the one? Because you had to throw a Hail Mary from the 35 anyway, because time ran out. So you go for it at the one, so that way you can kick the field goal when the ball's on the 30 for a 48-yard field goal. Like, there was not that much time, and he had only one timeout left. That was the other problem. I agree, terrible play calling. You called it, Chad. Not one time on those 3 plays did you run up the middle. So 4th and goal, you line up, you want to win, it's your rival, smack them in the mouth, run it up the gut, score the touchdown. Now you can go for the win. Go for 2. If that's really your concern, go for 2. You didn't have to play for the tie, as he was saying. Like, terrible. I think he dug his ditch even further by not just admitting, if I could redo it, it's always, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. Maybe I would do it different. If he goes with that, all right, we know he was wrong. Now he just looks like a fool because he was wrong first. and even Monday morning quarterback, he still thinks he's right, which he was wrong, which makes it worse.
Yeah, he definitely doubled down on a dumb decision there, and I don't know. Yeah. It just makes him look worse in the media to me.
Yeah. So, speaking of college football still, who deserves – let's talk Oklahoma. Oklahoma Sooners, they've had a lot of success the last couple years. First couple games this year, they look good. So, JT, let me start this one with you. Who deserves more credit for their most recent success at Oklahoma? Is it Lincoln Riley and his system that he has in place, or the quarterbacks, particularly Jalen Hurts, Kyler Murray, and Baker Mayfield?
I think right now it's closer than it should be, but I think what's really going to sway this answer is how well Baker and Kyler end up playing later on in the year, this year in the NFL. But right now, I think it's Lincoln Riley, and it's kind of hard to argue. He's possibly going to go 3-for-3 with Heisman Trophy winners. Like, that's crazy. And you just look at the guys that have won it for him, and Jalen's obviously in that conversation of he's now a favorite with Tua to win it. Like, people forget, Baker was twice a walk-on. Like, he was a walk-on at Tech. He walked on to Oklahoma, and Riley's system turned him into the number one overall pick. Jalen Hurts essentially lost his job at Bama because he was a limited passer and was holding the offense back. Look what he's doing now. Like I said, he's a Heisman favorite, dare I say a potential top 15 draft pick. He's completing, 80% of his passes, just under 900 passing yards, 9 touchdowns with 0 interceptions in 3 games. Like, he has more touchdowns than incompletions. And then Kyler's great, but, I mean, come on, he was, the number one high school quarterback, and he couldn't get on the field at Texas A&M for whatever reason. He had to transfer. And he's a 5'8 running back that Lincoln Riley turned into a number one overall pick. So right now, I think it's Riley's system, and I think he's going to – if Jalen Hurts wins the Heisman, it's a no-brainer.
All right, Chad, I'll kick it over to you. What do you think?
I think you got to give Lincoln Riley a lot of credit for, you know, the production, but also not only for his system, for the players that he's choosing. You know, he recruited – or. You know, I guess he didn't recruit Baker Mayfield.
He didn't recruit any of them.
He got them to work in his system. I guess that's what I could say. You know, he game plans to the strengths of the guys he has, and you can see it. Look at all these numbers that all these guys put up in his system. Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, and now Jalen Hurts, a guy that was on the outs at Alabama, and is putting up a historic numbers at Oklahoma, and you got to give him some credit for that. I mean, you don't even see this happening at some of these bigger schools, you know, with some quarterbacks. I mean, look at Clemson. Although Trevor Lawrence is balling out, like, Kelly Bryant was struggling. He struggled against some subpar teams when he was there too. So I think you just got to give most of the credit to Riley and his system, and just being able to structure it around the strengths of the guys that he has.
I think it's like anything, I guess, in life. It's a little bit of both, this him and his system as well as the quarterbacks. And right now I would lean more toward the quarterbacks just because you look at the guys that he has had and how they've gone number one overall. Not to say Lincoln hasn't helped them, but, like, those are pretty talented guys. But I think the deciding factor is what Jalen Hurts does, because JT's right, like, the Bama offense stalled under him. They weren't even starting him anymore. If he wins the Heisman, we know, yo, Lincoln Riley is the new college, not college, but the quarterback whisperer.
He's the new Urban Meyer.
Yeah, he's the new quarterback whisperer. So I'm going to reserve to see what Jalen Hurts does, because right now I think it's a little bit of both.
Quick question. If Baker and Kyler are struggling, let's say week 8, do you think Lincoln Riley's credibility just goes through the roof?
No, I don't think so.
No, that's totally different. Yeah, that's different, the NFL, yeah, compared to what, yeah, they can do in college. And especially in the big, what is that, the Big 12, where, like, nobody plays defense. I think the Swiss play better defense than the teams in the Big 12, man, for sure. I mean, there's nothing there, dude. It's like, oh, my goodness.
Because, I mean, the reason I asked that question, and then we'll move on to the next one, is because I think people think it's the quarterbacks right now, but Baker hasn't started out great, and Kyler's played good, but let's say he starts to struggle. I mean, people are going to think, you know, hey, like, these quarterbacks, you know, they were taking number one overall. They're not translating to the NFL as we thought they would. You know, it's the system. But I think it's too early to tell.
But Baker was really good last year. It's two games. Like, everyone's just got to relax.
I'm just asking. Well, let's stay in college football and let's switch over to some teams that aren't having success. Our Miami Hurricanes and, of course, those Florida State Seminoles. Clearly, the Canes are off to a 1-2 start, and I feel like the Seminoles are off to an 0-10 start with the way they've played, but they've actually won a game as well. Obviously, the two Florida programs are in turmoil right now. So, guys, I just wanted to see from you, which program is in more trouble right now?
JT, did you say Miami 0-2?
I said 1-2.
Oh, okay, 1-2.
We got our win last week, Bethune. Thank you very much.
our yearly victory.
Watching every play, too.
I'm going to say it's Miami because this is supposed to be their time. New indoor practice facility. They've got Hard Rock has been renovated. They brought in the new Miami.
That's not
hashtag.
Really a renovation.
Hard
though.
Rock is always renovated.
That's not really a renovation. Like we put this roof over. It's not a roof. That's not a renovation.
But that's a legit stadium now. Nah, come on, man. That's a legit stadium now, all right? That's one of the nicest stadiums out there, and it was built in the 80s.
You need to get out
so,
more.
The new Miami hashtag, Manny Diaz, new coach. They're supposed to, you know, this is supposed to be their time, and FSU is having down years, so the recruiting should be swayed in Miami's favor. So if they're struggling now, it may not get any better. For FSU, they can only go up from here because it's still a big-time program, and they may not be on the Clemson level right now, but 2 years ago they were. They still were on that level. So if Miami can't get it done now, then when? And I think that's why they're in bigger trouble than FSU.
I disagree. I think it's FSU, and I think it's not even close. I think the Seminoles are in bigger trouble just because I think Taggart has lost the program, and he's lost the fan base and lost the team. Like just this,
but that's the quick fix.
No. But
get
here,
rid of Taggart, everybody. You know, they'll bring in a big time coach.
But I'm gonna tell you why. So just look at what happened. I don't know if you guys heard about this, but just before this Virginia game, their top wide receiver and top offensive player, DJ Matthews, like there was a rumor that he tried to stage a mutiny against Taggart before probably your biggest game of the year. So, and he's left the program. He left the program before the Virginia game. Your top player just said, you know what, I can't do this anymore. I'm out. And just look at that fan base and like how far they've fallen since Jimbo has left. It's just bad. The team, like we aren't winning the games, but at least we look competitive. FSU just looks inept. Like, for the first time in maybe, like, 20 years ever, in my opinion, they look like they don't have any true NFL talent on the team. Like, it just looks bad. Like, they're not developing players. They have no guys that I would draft. The coach is terrible. The fan base is ready to just burn him at the stake. It's bad. Miami is not this bad. And then to make matters worse, like, I don't know if you guys saw this story. And I think it was in Tallahassee, a four-year-old kid started a lemonade stand to buy out Willie's contract. And I think the kid actually made like $200. And his dad matched the $200 and sent that check to the boosters for FSU to start buying out Willie Taggart's contract. Man, it is bad in Florida State. It's going to get uglier.
I guess I can follow that up because I'm not a fan of either school. And I'm pretty neutral on this topic, but just based off one of your previous guests and his love for FSU and the amount I talk to him and keep up with him and his sheer disgust of where the program is right now.
Chad, who might that be?
Mr. Mike Wallace. He was on episode 18. Yeah.
Shout out to Mike Wallace.
I call him.
Hope you're listening.
I call him Mike Wallace, aka Mr. Bleep Bleep. So. But no, anyways, back to the topic. Yeah, it's got to be FSU. Like JT said, in my lifetime, I moved to Florida when I was 5 years old. I don't remember the Seminoles ever not being relevant. And right now, they're not even relevant. Actually, as a Pitt fan. As a Pitt fan, I wish this year was like our crossover game so we could actually play FSU and have a chance to beat them. That's how bad it is right now. And I don't know another time in my lifetime where I could say that. So, yeah, it's pretty bad. The Hurricanes aren't – I don't expect them to win the – you know, the Coastal this year, but I think it's salvageable because you have athletes on defense and you have a young quarterback who's going to get a little better. And then you have skill players, you know, you have that some fast receivers and running backs that I think can make plays. So whenever I know Pitt has to play them every year. And again, I'm speaking from my standpoint, I always worry about playing Miami because no matter how down they are, how bad of a season they are, they can always go off and have a big game. But FSU is in turmoil, and I don't see them turning around anytime soon until they change regimes and get rid of Taggart.
Name one legit NFL player on FSU's team. You can't.
I think he just left the program.
Yeah, that's
well, Cam Akers. Cam Akers is legit.
Yeah. I don't know.
He'll
be in the NFL. He'll be drafted.
He is. Just real quick, a personal experience. I told Mike that I actually saw DJ Matthews play in high school, and when I found out he was going to FSU, I was like, "Dang, man, that guy's going to tear it up for you guys." And the fact that he's leaving is just ironic about the whole situation. Like, that kid's a stud, and he's probably going to end up at another, you know, school in the South instead of being at FSU.
They're in bad shape.
Well, Chad, we're only 3 weeks into the college football season, but, you know, never too early. What has been the biggest surprise to you as well as the biggest disappointment so far?
Man, again, I'll go first on this. And I got to say, man, I'm a big proponent of the West Coast. I love it out there. The few times I've traveled out there, I think it's beautiful. So many different sites to see, but honestly, the Pac-12 to me is—I'm gonna start with disappointments—is terrible. I don't see a team in that conference that should even sniff the playoff. Maybe it shouldn't even sniff like a New Year's Day bowl game. They're pretty weak. They've lost a lot of their marquee out of conference matchups, and I just think. I remember in college, like JT and Mike Wallace would always talk how weak the Pac-12 was compared to other conferences out east. But I think this year it's really showing again. I don't see any marquee programs out there at all. Although, you know, I think Oregon may be the best one, and they still lost their first game to Auburn, who's probably the, you know, fourth or fifth best team in their side of the SEC West. So that's biggest disappointment. The biggest surprise to me is probably UCF. The fact that they lost their quarterback, who was a Heisman candidate last year, Mackenzie Milton, and they're still putting up big numbers. They blew out a Pac-12 team last week, and they're probably going to blow out an ACC team this week. I think they're really starting to roll, and if they keep this up with this quarterback, you know, and all the supporting cast they've had, they brought back a lot of the same players. They have to be in the discussion for the playoff. I don't know if they're going to have enough, you know, BCS points or whatever to get in, but they're a huge surprise to me the way that they're still rolling despite having a lot of inexperience at quarterback.
All right, that was well said on all counts there. BCS points, though, bro, that's a thing of the past. Thing of the past. It's the college playoff now.
That's a good point.
But I know what you were thinking. I know what you meant, though. I know what you meant.
See, I don't know what you had for lunch today, man. You've been quite savage on this episode. I don't know what's happening. You're usually not this witty. I need to stop teaching you so many little tricks.
Man, I just assumed y'all knew what I was talking about. My bad.
You were testing us. All right, I got you. No, I usually don't call out our guests like that, but I just thought it was so funny because, like, BCS points, like, some of the younger kids listening to this episode, like, have no idea what we meant by BCS points. Like, they will never understand the pain some programs went through that ended up number 3 on the BCS points, like Miami back in 2000.
Man, I appreciate you bringing me down a peg.
NCAA football. That means you were playing NCAA football. That's the only reason he came up with the BCS points thing.
I never lost. Never lost at college football.
I like it, though, Chad. It was good ribbing there. It was not meant to be an attack. I just thought it was great that you mentioned BCS points. JT, what about for you?
I'm going to actually go kind of the same route. He went with disappointments first. So I don't know how much we expected out of this, but this is terrible. And I feel like this is on the FSU level. My biggest disappointment is just what's going on with Tennessee. Like, this is an SEC team that has – a history. Like, it's not like talent never goes to Tennessee. They're 0-2. They lost to what? Georgia Southern and BYU, which BYU beat USC, so I guess that's not as bad. But to make matters worse, the coach compared them to the Titanic. He said, and I quote, "When the boat starts going down, remember all the mice running to the top, right? That's us and the people leaving our program." That's just terrible. Like, Tennessee, I don't understand how they got this bad, but they're looking like a team that might have to leave the SEC if they keep this up. That's my biggest disappointment. And then my biggest surprise is that who would ever thought this would happen in my lifetime? LSU has a passing game. Like, this is crazy. Joe Burrow, the quarterback, man, he's looking like this is not the LSU that we know. So, like, just look at that Texas game. What, he had like 471 yards and 4 touchdowns in a primetime game? Man, if they could pass like that, LSU looks dangerous. Watch out.
That was a good one, the LSU passing game. I like that one.
I've never seen an LSU quarterback be able to pass the ball.
Yeah. I never thought we'd see an offense out of LSU like that either.
471? Against DBU?
Biggest disappointment, I'm going to go with Syracuse because everyone was hyping them up, and you finally thought, all right, hey, maybe ACC can get rolling with them, Clemson, some other teams. But even though I'm not surprised they're struggling, but what, they got blown out by Maryland, blown out by Clemson, even though
Maryland's that's a good not, team, you know, though. I think Maryland's
but
got
then
a good
Maryland
future.
Lost to Temple.
Yeah, Maryland just lost
to Temple. Yeah,
but the first 2 weeks, they were on fire.
Yeah, but then you lose to Temple. So, like, what's that tell you about Syracuse? And then they lose at home 41-6. Like, they weren't even in that ball game.
They weren't.
So,
it was a bad game.
To me, it's disappointing. I don't think it's a disappointment, like, oh, a shocker. I'm just disappointed because they had some high expectations. I'm not surprised, though. My biggest surprise goes back to kind of what you were alluding to with Tennessee. Georgia State beating Tennessee at Neyland Stadium. That's crazy to me. No matter how bad Tennessee has been, like, you still don't expect Georgia State to roll in there and beat them.
Yeah, that's insane. So, like, how does that happen?
I don't know. It's Tennessee, man. It's Tennessee lately. But listen, fellas, Chad in particular, thank you very much for joining the show. It's been a pleasure. We'd love to have you back on later in the football season to see maybe some of your predictions about the Steelers and some of the other things you had mentioned. But love to have you back. It's been a lot of fun, man.
Hey, thanks again, guys. Again, long-time listener, big-time fan of the show. You know, it's funny to listen sometimes and kind of talk to myself saying what I would say if I was on the show. But, no, it's been an absolute pleasure, guys, and I'd be more than happy to come back later in the season and chop it up with you guys again.
Man, thank you again. Thank you for listening, Chad, being a loyal listener. We appreciate it. JT, great show. We had a lot of laughs this time. You know, you're rubbing off on me with, you know, having to make fun of other people.
I know.
I don't like that.
That's got to stop because only one of us can
don't
do
be
that.
Like him. Don't be like him.
If we're both doing that, nobody's ever going to come on again. So you gotta go back to your nice guy thing.
All right. Yeah, I don't like that being calling out people and making fun of people. I don't think that's me.
I think he's low-key smiling. He likes that. He's like, I like this shit's kind of fun.
Good cop,
I
bad
see why
cop.
He always does it.
Well, for the people at home, Chad's a big listener. You can find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio app. Please subscribe to us there, and please leave us a 5-star review. So, also on social media, you can find us the handle at JT in the Don, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So, thank you again for listening, everyone out there. And JT, till the next episode, see you.
Peace.